after year.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading from Good Old Days magazine. Since Easter will be celebrated this month, I want to start off today's program by sharing some Easter stories with you that readers have submitted. The first is submitted by Jennifer Broadstreet Hess, and it's titled Spending Easter with the Best Peeps. Easter celebrations have always been the most memorable for me with my extended family. Growing up in the early 1970s, I remember waking up early with excitement on Easter morning at Granny and Papa's large two-story home. The house was packed full of cousins, aunts, and uncles that weekend. The night before Easter, Granny would have all us grandkids put our Easter baskets on the enclosed sun porch. She advised us that this way, the Easter Bunny had easy access to our baskets without waking anyone. One particular Easter felt extra special because my mother had sewn a new dress for me. I usually had to wear hand-me-downs. It was a long cotton dress with a dark blue background and ornate, colorful flowers. Mom had taken extra care in making me a white lace pinafore to wear over it. She had even made me a small purse. Church was always an integral part of celebrating Easter. Everyone in our family attended. I loved standing beside my father and sharing a hymnal with him. It made me feel so grown up. I loved hearing him belt out the meaningful old hymn, The Old Rugged Cross. After church, the families gathered beside the blooming lilac bush by my grandparents' home for pictures. After pictures, my cousins and I raced to the porch to see what the Easter Bunny had given us. Oh my, I must have been an extra good girl that year. I got a large chocolate bunny, jelly beans in every color of the rainbow, marshmallow peeps, and chocolate eggs galore. Mom came out on the porch smiling, reminding us not to eat any candy until after lunch. I could smell the aromas of Granny's mouth-watering barbecue brisket wafting from the kitchen. The women helped prepare and set the dining room table, buffet style. We always stood around the table in a circle before the meal, and Papa would say grace. We ate to our heart's content, and then the cousins ran outside for our annual egg hunt. After games, we tiredly gathered on the porch to happily devour some Easter candy. And the next Easter story I want to share with you is submitted by Barbara Young, and it's titled Easter for a Large Family. Our family was fairly large, with Mom and Dad, four boys and three girls. Aunts, uncles, and cousins on both sides of the family lived nearby in the area around Springfield, Illinois. We always got together on Easter Sunday. All of us, nieces and nephews and cousins, along with the new babies in our family, wore our Easter finery. Dresses for the girls and new suits for the boys. Some of their suits came with vests and shiny new shoes. The older girls wore white gloves and Easter bonnets with plenty of flowers. On those bright, sunny Easter Sundays, we were invited to Grandma's for a delicious home-cooked meal. Grandma was famous for those. And on this particular Easter in 1969, after we all ate, we were told there was going to be a surprise event for us kids out in the backyard. But before all that could happen, we went to church and enjoyed the Easter Sunday service. It included baptisms of some boys and girls. The baptism consisted of being dunked in water. The clergyman tipped you backward while you pinched your nose shut. Each person was given a gown to wear for the baptism, and then they changed back into their Easter finery afterward. After church was over, people chatted with the minister, shaking his hand and saying they had enjoyed the sermon. He was also invited to Grandma's for dinner. She lived just down the road in a big house on the farm where they had been raising corn for 20 years. The night before Easter, the adults had placed plastic Easter eggs full of candy in Grandma's grassy backyard. How pretty they looked! Blue, yellow, orange, red, purple, and green. They were so excited to see how the kids would like the surprise after Easter dinner. Everyone imagined the kids running everywhere looking for those eggs. The next day, after church, everyone came in Grandma's front door. The table was all set. There was the warm aroma of sliced ham with all the trimmings. In the corner was a table with apple pie, chocolate brownies, and sugar cookies. Everyone found a seat around the table. The smaller kids had a table of their own in the kitchen. The minister blessed the food with prayer. Everyone said the food was delicious and complimented Grandma. After coffee and dessert, the minister asked everyone to go outside and enjoy the beautiful spring day. The adults drifted outside, followed by the kids, who were excited for the promised Easter surprise. But then it seemed like everyone shouted at the same time. What happened? All of the colorful eggs were open and the candy was gone. Everyone was baffled. Right at that moment, two squirrels popped onto the top of the fence. That was it. Squirrels. But now, what to do for the kids? Grandma had the answer. She had the adults gather the eggs the squirrels had left. She had spoons and tiny donuts to put in each plastic egg, and she lined them up in two rows, 10 feet apart. We were going to have an Easter egg roll. The first one to get to the finish line would get a plush rabbit, not a squirrel. One of the boys won the rabbit and the others enjoyed their donuts. Easter was different that year, but it was still fun. And the last Easter story I want to share with you is titled Wagons for Easter, and this is by Arlene Chauvald. A basket with eggs, candy, and maybe a few small toys was what a kid usually got on Easter morning when I was growing up in the 1940s in Iron River in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. But on Easter 1949, my cousin and my little brother got an unusual surprise. They each received a Radio Flyer Special Edition wagon. I was the oldest of the cousins, and the wagon issue started when I got a Radio Flyer Special Edition for my 9th birthday on April 14th, which was just a few days before Easter that year. Almost all our extended family lived in the same tiny neighborhood, and when my cousin and my brother saw my birthday wagon, they wanted one too. So with Easter just around the corner, our families decided to splurge and buy the wagons. Ordinarily, such a big purchase was reserved only for a birthday or Christmas. After gathering at my grandmother's house for Easter dinner, we kids lined up outside to form a wagon train and have a picture taken with our shiny new Radio Flyer specials. My mother, who is now 107, remembers the wagons cost about $4 each. Those little red wagons served us well over the years. What we called the back road was sparsely traveled and had a slight hill that made it great for my brother and me to coast down. Unfortunately, my cousin Joan was not allowed to engage in such rough play with her wagon. Her mom insisted she take care of it. But she was allowed to use hers for a doll buggy, and she often pulled the little red wagon along the path between our grandma's house and hers to borrow a cup of sugar or flour for her mom or to return some item. In those days, mothers were always borrowing or returning something from one another. In our neighborhood, it was all in the family when it came to sharing resources. Sometimes we used the wagons to give our dogs, Prince and Pal, a ride, but that usually didn't work. They were used to running on their own and didn't want to stay confined in a wagon. In those days, dogs didn't have to be tied up or fenced in, especially out in the country where we lived. In the fall, my brother and I helped haul potatoes from the garden to the house in our wagons. Later in the fall, we'd help my dad and Uncle John by using our wagons to carry wood they had chopped to the woodpile. Our wagons were stored during the winter when snow was in abundance. Then we kids used only sleds, skis, or toboggans for transportation. I have many happy memories of our little red wagons. When I grew up and had kids of my own, I bought another wagon, this time a regular radio flyer, to transport my kids to visit my parents who still lived less than a mile away. The wagon was cheaper than a stroller. We owe the pleasure of those wonderful little red wagons to Antonio Payson, who was born in Venice, Italy in 1897. He came to America at age 16 and ended up in Chicago, where he invested his savings in woodworking tools and made his first wagon in 1917. He had never had a wagon of his own when he was young, and he wanted to make a wagon that was affordable for every child. In 1927, he took a risk and invested his savings in a small factory, calling his first wagon the Radio Flyer, because he was fascinated with both radio and flight. The wagons were later named according to size and style. The most popular color was red, but the wagons were also available in green and blue. And the next story I have for you is titled Time of My Life, and it is submitted by Sarah Etchen Baker. In the 1950s and 60s, middle school didn't exist, only junior high and high school. Our local junior high included grades 7 through 9, while the high school consisted of grades 10 through 12. At the end of my ninth grade year, I headed to Austin Junior High for its spring formal dance, a timeless teenage rite of passage of a sort, a dance heralding the beginning of our upcoming high school years. As I recall, the pre-dance preparations included getting my hair professionally done and finding the perfect dress, a cowl neck, silky yellow and white vertical stripe dress. On the night of the dance, Dad surprised me with a yellow wrist corsage to match my dress. Before driving me to the dance, he tied it around my right wrist, saying, "You're a beautiful young lady. I'm proud of you." He drove me the short distance to Austin Junior High and pulled up to the school's entrance. Then he did the most amazing, chivalrous thing. "Wait," he said, putting the car into park. He got out of the car, walked to the passenger side, and opened my door. "Have a fabulous time. I'll be here after the dance is over to pick you up." As you can imagine, I felt so ladylike and all grown up. I scurried toward the gymnasium, where I found my friends waiting for me. Together, we pushed open the door to the gymnasium and gasped in unison. The dull, smelly gym we'd come to know had been converted into a mini ballroom. The bright overhead fluorescent lights had been doused, replaced with twinkling string lights. Purple and silver crepe paper streamers and balloons hung from the ceiling, and rock and roll music blared over the loudspeakers. For 2 hours, I had a great time dancing with my girlfriends, never expecting any ninth grade boy to ask me to dance. Then, just before the last dance, it happened. Ralph Buchanan, the ninth grade heartthrob, made his way across the dance floor and stopped, right in front of me. Me, of all people. I just couldn't believe it. "Would you like to dance?" he stammered. I smiled, nodded, and blushed. He took my quivering hand in his and escorted me onto the dance floor. I put my hands on his shoulders. He put his hands on my waist. The scenery and people around us dissolved as we swayed back and forth together in a circle for 3 minutes. the shortest, most magical 3 minutes of my life. Then the music stopped. The string lights were doused and the huge overhead fluorescent lights flickered on, almost blinding us. The principal stepped onto the stage, picked up the microphone, and announced, "Congratulations, boys and girls. You're young men and women now. On behalf of the faculty and staff, I officially proclaim you high schoolers. Good night and good luck." A bewildered and speechless Ralph took my hand in his and ushered me outside, where Dad sat waiting in his car. Then Ralph did just as Dad had done. He opened the car door for me. Although my legs felt tingly and a bit unsteady beneath me, I scooched inside, feeling much like Cinderella, who'd just been swept off her feet by Prince Charming. Before closing the door, Ralph said, "Thank you for the dance. See you at high school. Maybe we'll have some classes together." "I'd like that," I replied, blushing once again. As Dad pulled out of the parking lot, he asked, "How was the dance? Did you have a good time?" "The dance was wonderful," I replied, glancing in the rearview mirror to quickly catch a glimpse of Ralph in the shadow of the parking lot behind me. "I had the time of my life." And my next story to share with you is submitted by Barry Davis, and it's titled "The Gumball Caper." I was 11 years old in 1951 and attended sixth grade at E.C. White Grade School near the junction of Brookside Boulevard, Main Street, and 48th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. I had a job delivering over 500 newspapers to houses and 10-story apartment buildings in the surrounding Country Club Plaza area. I earned $12.75 a week. After putting $11 a week into a savings account, I still had money to blow. There was a penny gumball machine in Broadmoor's supermarket across the street from school, and among the many yellow, white, green, and red balls were yellow balls with red swirls that could be redeemed for 25 cents. My scheme was to insert 100 pennies one at a time and collect all the gumballs in a clean, empty, round 2-quart ice cream carton. I surely would get 4 or more prize balls, and sometimes you could shake the machine and get 2 balls instead of 1. I could sell the rest of the gumballs to schoolmates, 2 for a penny. I did end up with 3 prize balls and 108 regular gumballs. I got my 75 cents and was on my way to being an entrepreneur. Without thinking, I popped a couple of gumballs into my mouth on my way to school, and then when I got there, put the carton containing the remaining gumballs under my desk. I still had the gum in my mouth when the teacher noticed I was chewing something. Now, we all had been told chewing gum wasn't allowed. The teacher asked if I was chewing gum, and I confessed. Under normal circumstances, I would have had to go to the principal's office, report the infraction, get marked up for it, and lose the gum. But this time, the teacher proclaimed, "If you're going to chew gum, you should share with everyone." Thinking I would get a reprieve, I immediately pulled the carton out and started passing out the remaining gumballs to my classmates. I had never seen such a look of disdain from a teacher. She grabbed my arm and took me directly to the principal's office, where I was promptly sent home with no gumballs. And next we have a story titled "My Sole Responsibility." And this is submitted by John Scanlon. While growing up with 6 brothers, mowing the grass in our backyard was my sole responsibility. We had a backyard enclosed by a chain-link fence that formed a 20-yard by 20-yard square at the back of the house. That way, Mom could let my younger brothers play in the backyard without worrying about them falling into our pond or meandering down into a ravine. The tool of my trade, an archaic push mower, was stored in the shed back by the pond's northwestern corner. I called it a push mower as opposed to a riding mower, which was my brother Jerry's baby. Riding that tiny tractor, he was responsible for the grass in the two larger front yards. On every other Saturday morning, mowing the backyard grass first involved retrieving the push mower from the shed. I had to shove it from there for 50 yards up to the gravel lane where we parked our cars. There, I always had to ask Dad to siphon some gas from his truck into an empty gas can. I didn't want to do that nasty job myself for fear of getting gasoline into my mouth. After Dad did the deed, I would take the gas can and fill the tiny tank on our push mower. Then I pushed the mower into the backyard at the southeast corner gate. Mom shooed all of my younger brothers into the house to avoid being hit by any dangerous objects the push mower might fling out, things like pieces of G.I. Joe gear, small relics belonging to Johnny West, the cowboy action figure, and the ubiquitous Little Green Army men. For that same reason, I locked the dogs out of the backyard, too. It always took about a million tugs on the starter rope to finally get ignition. I needed a rest, and I hadn't even started mowing yet. Once the push mower was running, I had a system for cutting the grass. I always commenced in the southeastern corner at the gate. With no obstacles there, that was the easiest mowing. I mowed the grass from there along the southern chain link fence, pushing the mower around two young cherry trees and back to the first swing set. After completing the rear of the backyard behind the swing set, steering around a giant oak that held our treehouse, I turned right and mowed along the northern chain link fence. This was next to Mom's clothesline, so I had to be careful to not spew grass clippings on Mom's drying laundry. I always put the hard task off to the end. These included mowing around the second swing set along the northern side of the chain link fence and around the sandbox in the northeast corner. Having saved the back of the house and the deck for last, I turned right again and mowed around the picnic tables to return to the gate at the southeastern corner. Phew, job complete. I shut down the push mower and returned it to the shed. Then I enjoyed a glass of lemonade on the deck. I didn't get a dime of allowance for mowing the backyard grass. It was just my responsibility. And the next story I want to share with you is submitted by Marie Latta, entitled, Our Door Was Always Open. I once thought my folks invented the open door policy. Our door was always open, whether it was a neighbor searching for his cow who had escaped through a low spot in the line fence, a student selling magazine subscriptions, or a Watkins salesman, all were invited to sit down, have a glass of iced tea or a cup of coffee, and visit a while. We lived on a farm in Michigan and welcomed everyone, even overnighters. I was 8 years old and seldom had playmates. The nearest neighbors were a quarter of a mile away, and the only girl my age lived half a mile in the other direction. Like my folks, I loved company. Mom's friend Olive often came for the weekend. Aunt Dot and Uncle Bus, newly married, stayed a few weeks until they saved money to rent a place. The longest any visitor stayed was in 1940 when Uncle Floyd and Aunt Ellen and their four children came. We saw their car drive up while we were eating supper, and Mom opened the door to greet them. "Come in and sit down," she said as she dished up more food. "Marie, go down to the cellar and get a quart of peaches and one of green beans," she told me. Thanks to gardening and home canning, we always had a good supply of canned food. Dad began putting more chairs at the table and placed two more at the kitchen cabinet. "So what brings you folks way out here?" he asked. My uncle and aunt lived 24 miles away. Uncle Floyd didn't answer, but his wife spoke up. "Floyd lost his job," she said. "We got evicted because we're behind on the rent and we haven't any place to stay." Mom and Dad didn't hesitate. "We'll put you up," they both said. Taking in a family of six wasn't easy. We had only three small bedrooms, so I shared my bed with my cousins, Ruth and Darla. My uncle and aunt took the other upstairs bedroom. The downstairs bedroom was my parents', so the boys, Frank and Richard, slept in the living room, taking turns on the davenport. The unlucky one got a blanket and pillow on the floor. The next few weeks, Uncle Floyd looked for work, but when he was home, he helped Dad with lawn mowing and weeding at the garden. Aunt Ellen gave Mom a hand with household chores, and they chatted and caught up on family doings. I loved having everyone there. We kids played hide-and-seek, jumped rope, climbed trees, and played croquet. I'd longed for playmates. Now with four cousins, the time flew by. But it wasn't all fun and games. We had no indoor plumbing, so there was usually a waiting line at the outdoor toilet. Laundry increased dramatically, and with our old wringer washer, it took all day Monday to get everything washed and dried on the outdoor clothesline. On Tuesdays, Mom and Aunt Ellen took turns ironing. Initially, cooking went smoothly, but Mom had her way of doing things, and so did Aunt Ellen. They decided Mom would cook one day and Aunt Ellen the next. Both were good cooks, so that satisfied everyone. Much as I liked my cousins, I was dismayed when Ruth dropped my music box and it never played again. Darla broke the collar tabs off my paper doll's clothes. When we played catch, Frank threw the ball close to the house and broke a kitchen window. After 2 months, Uncle Floyd found a job and began looking for a house to rent. When another month rolled by, the family retrieved their furniture from storage in a friend's garage and were packing up to move back to the city. We waved goodbye with mixed feelings. On the plus side, there would be no more waiting for the toilet, no huge piles of dishes to wash, no having to listen to Uncle Floyd's radio station every night. But their visit reminded us how blessed we were. We had a home, food, and enough money to pay the bills. My parents were happy to share with Uncle Floyd's family in their time of need. Dad enjoyed reminiscing with his brother. Mom liked catching up on family gossip and adding some of Aunt Ellen's casseroles to her recipe file. And I loved playing with my cousins. And I'd had one of my most fun summers ever. I've got a trivia question for you. What popular kids television show was hosted by Buffalo Bob Smith? The answer, Howdy Doody. The show also included a marionette named Howdy Doody and Clarabelle the Clown. We've run out of time for today's episode of Good Old Days. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Good Old Days is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
Howdy, folks. Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?